Okay, go.
It is with some regret that Spot wakes. It is with some regret that Spock wakes the captain only 70 minutes after hearing his breath even out into sleep. If you are able, we should continue, Spock says. The temperature has risen sufficiently that I may proceed in relative comfort.
Awesome.
Jim says, without the enthusiasm that typically accompanies the word. They rise and resume walking. Jim, again, illogically, insists on carrying the equipment, and Spock, again, illogically, refuses to relinquish it. Their journey proceeds in not unpleasant silence until dawn, and Spock reflects that under more felicitous, is that it?
Felicitous.
And Spock reflects that under more felicitous circumstances, this walk might pass for an agreeable recreational experience. Once the sun rises, however, it is apparent to Spock that Jim is suffering from the effects of the heat and radiation. As the sun gains height in the sky, its rays beat down more fiercely, and Jim's already reddened skin begins to deepen to an extremely unhealthy scarlet. Spock's shirt has been returned to its previous function as a barrier against the absorbed heat of the black metal of his burden, and is therefore of no use in shading Jim from the sun. They do not speak now. It appears to Spock that it takes every resource that Jim can muster merely to continue walking. His steps falter more and more frequently as the day's heat intensifies, and suddenly Spock notices a troubling sign. You have ceased to sweat, he observes, not bothering to keep the worry from his voice.
Okay.
Jim slurs, without looking at Spock. That may indicate that your body has no more moisture to exude, a symptom of severe dehydration.
And what are we going to do about that?
Jim mumbles.
You don't have any water. Neither do I. We reach the station or I die. I already knew that.
As Spock watches, dismayed, Jim takes two more stumbling steps, then suddenly collapses to the sand.
I can get up.
The captain protests and attempts to do so, but merely falls once more. Spock surveys his fallen captain. Parts of his skin are a deep red, beginning to show bruised purple undertones, and there are raised spots on top of his shoulders that Spock suspects may be developing blisters. His eyes are unfocused, and his skin is still dangerously dry. Spock sits down with the equipment on the sand, not far from Jim. He wordlessly pushes Jim into a supine position, then unwraps his shirt from the handle of the equipment and lays it gently over Jim's abdomen and lap. Finally, he places the equipment on top of the shirt on Jim's body, then slides one arm under Jim's shoulder and one under his knees, and lifts both weights at once. Jim makes a feeble attempt to struggle. And lifts both weights as one. Jim makes a feeble attempt to struggle, mumbling negatives in a weak, scraping voice, but his movements are ineffective. With Jim's body held securely against his own, and the repair equipment settled in the curve of Jim's waist, Spock takes a step, and then another. Spock does not know how long he walks with Jim in his arms. Vulcan bodies are extremely efficient at preserving moisture, so he is not dehydrated.
I'm sorry, my roommate just came in. Yeah, what's up?
Do you mind if I throw my stuff in the drawer?
We're kind of recording right now. Sorry. Can it wait, like...
When would be a time when I could do that?
45 minutes or so? Like, when I'm done, can I just throw them in for you?
I'll do it in 45. I'll be back in 45.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, she was wanting to get into my room to put her clothes in the dryer, because for some reason, our dryer and washer hookups are in my closet, which makes total sense, of course. I am so sorry. I forget where we were. But the sun's light is blinding?
Yeah, I'll start from the beginning of the paragraph.
Okay.
Spock does not know how long he walks with Jim in his arms. Vulcan bodies are extremely efficient at preserving moisture, so he is not dehydrated. But the sun's light is blinding. Spock is exhausted, and the weight he carries is heavy, even for a Vulcan. After some stretch of time, surely exaggerated by Spock's compromised perception, he sees a dark shape on the horizon. As he approaches, it resolves into the Vulcan sub-settlement that is their goal. Spock attempts to communicate this back to Jim, but the captain has fallen unconscious. When Spock stumbles through the main gate entrance of the settlement, his first words are for the repair equipment, which is gratefully and speedily removed from his hands and taken to the power station. His next words are, "A healer. My captain requires a healer." Spock is directed, Jim still cradled in his arms, to a medical office in the direct center of the settlement. When he is led to a biobed and instructed to place Jim upon it, Spock finds it illogically difficult to persuade his taxed arms to release Jim's unconscious body. When Jim's bare back makes contact with the bed, a low moan escapes his lips, broken with whimpers as the weight of his own body puts pressure on the burns.
"Commander Spock?"
a young Vulcan woman asks respectfully.
"The engineers at the power station request your expertise. They know what is necessary to make the repairs, but they predict that, with your assistance, the repairs can be completed 68% more quickly. If you will come with me..."
"I will not leave him," Spock interrupts. Seeing the faint disapproval on the woman's face, Spock gathers his logical faculties. "The engineers are fully qualified to make the necessary repairs. My presence can only hasten the process, and is therefore beneficial but not essential. The captain's condition is such that he cannot make the necessary decisions regarding his own care. As such, it is essential, not merely beneficial, that I be present with him in order to both supervise his care and provide the necessary emotional support. Logic dictates that each resource be assigned where there is greatest need. Therefore, my place is here."
"Understood."
The woman departs, leaving Spock with an unconscious Jim and the Vulcan healer, who has finally appeared and is scanning Jim's body with a tricorder.
Wait a second. The roommate's unloading the dishwasher or something out there. And she was not here when we started. Okay, I think we're good. "We will begin intravenous fluids to combat the dehydration,"
she pronounces over the soft sound of Jim's continued moaning.
"And glucose for nourishment, as the human is too fragile to ingest solid foods at present. The burns are serious. Our small outpost possesses only one dermal regenerator. Of limited charge, and I will therefore be unable to immediately heal the entirety of the burned area. I predict that the dermal regenerator's charge will extend only to heal the equivalent of 15 square centimeters. Where should I begin?"
Spock looks down at the vast expanse of red skin, bewildered by the question. Without immediate repair, he knows it is likely that some of the burns will scar, and he does not judge himself qualified to make such a personal decision on Jim's behalf.
"My back."
The heretofore unconscious Jim says.
I think surprised. It's heretofore?
Oh, heretofore. The heretofore unconscious Jim says, surprising Spock, but not the healer, who merely nods. When Spock raises an inquisitive eyebrow, Jim explains through gritted teeth,
"Gotta be able to lie down without wanting to scream. Then I can sleep."
"That would indeed be beneficial," Spock agrees, extremely relieved to see Jim conscious and apparently lucid and articulate, though not up to his usual standards. After a patch of Jim's back is returned to its usual pale tone, Jim makes good on his earlier promise and falls into a fitful sleep, broken by whimpers, betraying the pain that Jim was too proud to display while conscious. Spock places one hand on Jim's hair.
There's a really loud car or something over there, isn't there? Sorry, Could you start from broken by whimpers?
Broken by whimpers, betraying the pain that Jim was too proud to display while conscious. Spock places one hand on Jim's hair, and after a long hesitation, reaches out with his other hand to loosely clasp Jim's. It is an unacceptably intimate gesture by Vulcan standards. Spock turns to see the Vulcan healer who has been treating Jim.
"Yes, you're very manly, dude."
"Oh no, that's the wind."
"Oh, okay."
"It's really busy out." He does not remember her name, but she has been watching what Spock admits is an unseemly, inappropriate display of emotion. Although she is clearly observing him closely, Spock cannot bring himself to regret his behavior. The overriding concern here must be for Jim's comfort, and Jim appears to derive comfort from Spock's physical proximity, and increased emotionality. He directs a look towards the healer that he hopes will quell any impulse that she might have to verbally pass judgment upon his behavior in a way that might upset Jim. She meets his gaze calmly. She appears wholly unintimidated. And there is some subtle cast to her features that bespeaks an emotion of her own that Spock is not skilled enough to read. It might be approval or sadness or something utterly different. Spock is struck with a new sympathy for humans who are forced to attempt to interpret his own visual cues. Looking away from Spock's eyes and resting her gaze on Jim instead, the healer begins speaking, slowly and without effect. Her words shock him.
"I was Tahila once,"
she says. Her voice is even and her gaze does not waver.
"She was a child care provider. She gave up her seat on the evacuation shuttle so that two more of her charges might survive. She died with Vulcan, like so many."
She turns to meet Spock's eyes again, and the depth of her sorrow in her own eyes batters Spock. It is more, even, than he had seen in his father after his mother's death. It is more than Spock had believed that any full-blooded Vulcan could feel. More than Spock had believed that any being could feel and survive.
"I was Tahila once,"
she repeats softly, then leaves without another word. Approximately an hour later, a Vulcan man enters the medical office to inform Spock that the necessary repairs have been made to the power station, and that the Vulcan High Council and the Enterprise have been apprised of the situation.
"The chief medical officer of the Enterprise desires to speak with you,"
he tells Spock.
A secure line has been opened for you in the communications office across the hall."
Spock is loath to leave Jim alone, but Jim would be first to say that his responsibility to the ship should come first. "What the hell has that crazy bastard done to himself now?" Dr. McCoy asks, with which Spock feels is an unnecessarily accusatorial tone. Spock apprises the doctor of Jim's condition, and of the limitations of the sub-settlement's medical facilities. Unsurprisingly, Dr. McCoy insists that a shuttle be dispatched immediately to retrieve Jim and return him to the superior facilities in the Enterprise's sickbay. "That may be unwise," Spock says, somewhat unwillingly. He too desires that Jim be treated with the most advanced technology available. The shuttle that the captain attempted to pilot to the power station was sabotaged in some way. I am certain Mr. Scott, Mr. Chekov, or Mr. Sulu have surmised. It may have been that all of the Enterprise shuttles have been similarly compromised, posing an unacceptable risk to any crew members assigned to retrieve the captain. Damn. Dr. McCoy runs a hand through his hair in an agitated manner. I'll have Scotty check over the shuttles, and I'll have Uhura ask around to see if there are any other ships in the area that might have shuttles to spare. Sound good? I believe that to be a satisfactory plan of action. Spock agrees. Stop it, Wind. Doctor, when the captain and I left the fallen shuttle, one of the engineers was still alive, though losing blood at a dangerous rate. If there is some way to send help to him. Dr. McCoy shakes his head. When he speaks, his voice is terse but sympathetic. Spock, I know Vulcans are pretty sturdy, but if he was already losing blood when you guys left, it's been more than 24 hours, Spock. I'm sorry, but he's gone. I'll make a note for Scotty to send a shuttle to retrieve the bodies when we have a chance. That's the best thing we can do for him at this point. I see, Spock says quietly. He has not truly expected another outcome, but it is still a blow. How is Jim? The doctor's eyes are dark and worried. I'm not talking about the dehydration and the burns. I mean, how is he? The captain is in significant pain, Spock admits, and he is inconveniently stubborn. That said, he has thus far demonstrated his usual remarkable resilience. I will anticipate a full recovery. Yeah, well, Dr. McCoy grumbles, looking away. We'll see. Call me if anything changes. The kid's up here, freaking out, so the sooner you get back, the better. McCoy out. Jim is conscious when Spock returns to the medical office. His hands and jaw are clenched to the point of trembling, but he makes no sound.
Ship,
he grits out, and Spock relays what he learned from Dr. McCoy.
Storic.
Spock attempts to phrase Dr. McCoy's statement more tactfully. Spock attempts to phrase Dr. McCoy's statement more tactfully. Storic is on board the Enterprise. Dr. McCoy applied that he is anxious, but ultimately well.
There is something... Okay. Don't let him see me like this.
Jim forces out from between his clenched teeth.
Scares him.
I will pursue whatever course of action will most efficiently result in your complete and speedy recovery, Spock says firmly. And if that course of action includes barring Storic from sickbay for some brief period of time, I will not hesitate to take the necessary measures. Jim huffs out a laugh.
Won't work.
Spock purses his lips briefly, exasperated. Regardless of your apparent opinion on the matter, Captain, I do possess some intellectual capacity beyond that of a bright 10-year-old, certainly sufficient to the task of excluding said 10-year-old from the sickbay of a Federation starship which is under my control.
Bet you?
Jim asks, in spite of the pain, which is apparently extreme enough to force moisture to seep slowly from the corner of his eyes. He manages a brief sketch of his usual grin. Gambling is illogical, Spock informs him, and behavior unbecoming of a Starfleet officer.
Think you'll lose?
Jim jeers, and Spock exerts great effort in order not to allow himself to be goaded into a foolish and illogical wager with his superior officer. However certain he is that, were he to enter into such a wager, he would emerge the winner. Silence falls between them, as Jim focus visibly turns inward to battle his own pain. Spock would offer him sedation, but he knows that Jim would not accept it. Spock, too, returns to his own thoughts, to the memories of the previous night, and of Jim's quiet breaths against the back of his neck, Jim's wiry strength anchoring him against his body's tremors. It is inappropriate to think of such things when Jim is so obviously suffering, and doubly inappropriate to think them about his commanding officer and friend. Spock has made many demands on Jim. Spock winces with shame when he thinks of the cruel comments that he made on the subject of Jim's sexual behavior, comments which he can now admit were certainly motivated by jealousy. More by jealousy than any moralistic impulse on his part. And although Jim will never be aware of Spock's misappropriation of the memories of his altruistic actions, Spock's ethical training made him aware from an early age that a concealed transgression is a transgression nonetheless. Where the hell is the damn fool? Spock hears as he turns to see Dr. McCoy tramp into the medical office, followed by two quiet, harried-looking Enterprise nurses. He marches right up to Spock and points towards his own hair. You see this? He asks loudly. You see this, Spock? Gray hairs. And every one of them the fault of this idiot and his reckless stunts.
Bones!
Jim calls from the biobed, sparing Spock the daunting task of attempting to frame a reply to Dr. McCoy's assertion. You look like shit, kid, the doctor says bluntly. And don't you dare tell me you've refused sedation, you moron. Don't you tell me that.
Okay.
Jim grits out, still smiling.
Won't tell.
You dumb bastard. Dr. McCoy turns to Spock. Is he refusing sedation, Spock? He is. Not anymore, the doctor replies smoothly, jabbing Jim in the neck with a hypospray before the captain has the opportunity to protest or defend himself. Spock approves. There's a shuttle we borrowed from the USS...
Oh, good luck.
Jadhabai?
Sure.
There's a shuttle we borrowed from the USS Jadhabai waiting outside, McCoy informs Spock, while the nurses move Jim's unconscious body onto a stretcher. Scotty doesn't trust ours yet. When we get to sickbay, I'll do what I can for Jim's burns, but I can't regenerate his entire top half, so I'll probably just try out the new accelerated healing chamber, speed up the natural healing process on the burns by the equivalent of 3 or 4 days. You got a sentimental attachment to this place, or should we get a move on? "By all means, Doctor, let us depart," Spock says. However illogical it may be, some part of Spock views the settlement as an indirect cause of Jim's suffering. He will not in the slightest regret leaving it behind.
"Look at this, Spock," Jim calls, slowly peeling the skin away from the remains of the sunburn on his arm. "This is awesome!" The strip of skin he's peeling right now is already 2 inches long, which is totally disgusting, of course, but also totally cool. "This has got to be one of the 10 grossest things I've ever seen in my life," Kirk marvels. "Look, you can actually see through it. It's 3 inches long now. Do you think I could peel the entire sunburn off in one long... Do you think I could peel the entire sunburn off in one long strip like an apple peel? How cool would that be?" Spock doesn't even look up from the pad he's perusing by the side of Jim's bed in sickbay.
"Captain, I confess that I find myself somewhat at a loss to account for your behavior. On the one hand, you describe the peeling of your burn as gross, which carries a strong negative connotation. But on the other hand, you describe it as cool, which carries a strong positive connotation. Yet it is objectively true, especially in comparison to the previous sensation of heat which would have emanated from these burns."
Jim rolls his eyes and explains patiently. "Spock, you've got to understand. There's a segment of the human male population for which most really gross things are also considered awesome, okay? That's totally not true for females, okay? So don't go showing off some nasty insect specimen to Nurse Chapel and expect her to think it makes you hot. But if you tried that on Chekhov or Sulu, actually, more Sulu, definitely Sulu, you'd have a winner."
"Most illogical."
Kirk shrugs. "I know, that's humans for you. We're great big bundles of illogic." Storik marches into sickbay in that determined, stoic way he has, and Jim throws a gloating look over at Spock. "I told you we couldn't keep him out." Before deciding to see if the human male fascination with gross things applies to Vulcans, too. "Storik, look at this! My skin is coming off!" Storik's eyes widen slightly, and he comes to stand at the end of Jim's bed. "Are you well, Captain? My studies indicate that this is not a desirable condition for human skin." "Depends on the human," Jim says, grinning. "Me, I like it when my skin peels. It's kind of fun. Now, the state of my skin right before this, that was definitely undesirable." "Burns," Storik mumbles, examining the tops of Jim's shoulders, which were the worst burned, and aren't ready to peel yet, still an angry red. "Sunburns," Jim says, shrugging. "That happens to humans, when we're out in the hot sun for a long time. On Earth, I'd probably have to actually try to get a sunburn. I'd probably have to actually try to get a sunburn this bad, but on New Vulcan..." Storik whirls on Spock, interrupting Jim. "If it is in fact true that you permitted Captain Kirk, with his inferior Earth-normal sun protection potential, to be exposed to the intense radiation of New Vulcan sun for a prolonged period of time, then I must conclude that you have demonstrated either a reprehensible ignorance of the properties of the human body, or a reprehensible negligence in regard to the captain's well-being," Storik announces to an awkward-looking Spock. Jim rolls his eyes at the whole idea that Spock permitted him to do anything. Storik has turned away from Spock now, and he's staring fixedly at the monitors keeping track of Jim's condition, which Jim finds pretty hilarious, given that he's pretty sure Storik has no idea what any of those displays mean.
"Storik,"
Spock says.
"I assure you that the captain and I both took every possible precaution."
"To offer excuses is illogical," Storik interjects coldly, "as I have no interest in hearing them. They will alter neither my opinion of your poorly considered actions, nor the damage you have caused to Captain Kirk. Whoa, Jim thinks, taken aback. Okay, that's not funny or fair. Spock, of course, shuts right down, and Jim knows he has to act fast. Storik, button it and sit down. Spock, don't even think about going anywhere. Spock looks as if he's considering treating this order like he treats most of Jim or- Spock looks as if he's considering treating this order like he treats most of Jim's orders, by ignoring it. But in the end, he locks his hands behind his back and stands at attention while Jim turns his focus to Storik. Storik, here's a life lesson that I think you really need to absorb before you run around saying mean things to Spock again. Both Vulcans look like they want to object to Jim's use of the word mean, but he stares them down. Contrary to popular belief, Storik, I, Captain James Captain James Tiberius Kirk of the Starship Enterprise, am an adult. Like Commander Spock, but unlike you. Are you with me so far? Storik nods, but looks miffed. Tough shit, Jim thinks. Okay, here's the thing about being an adult. It means that, ultimately, the only person responsible for what happens to me is me, good or bad. There are some exceptions. For example, because I'm the captain of the Enterprise, I'm partially responsible for the people under my command, even though they're all adults. Kirk thinks about this. Except Chekov, he amends. But the upshot is this. When our shuttle crashed on New Vulcan on the way to the nuclear reactor, Commander Spock and I had to decide whether to stay safe in our shuttle and wait for the Enterprise to pick us up, or head for the reactor on foot, which would have put the two of us in considerable danger, but which would let us finish the mission and save dozens of lives. Still with me? Although you are intelligent for a human, I am confident that your thought processes will not reach the stage where they are beyond my comprehension. Therefore, please cease seeking reassurance of my understanding at such frequent intervals. Well, Jim thinks, at least he's pissed at me now instead of Spock. He decides to encourage that. Well, actually, it looks like this is one area where I know something you don't, Storik, so you're just going to have to put up with my illogical behavior for now, okay? Jim doesn't wait for a response before going on. Commander Spock told me to stay in the shuttle, that he'd go ahead because he's better equipped to deal with the heat and the sun, and that I could just stay all safe and snug tucked away in my shuttle. How do you imagine that went over with me? Storik doesn't answer, but Spock mutters,
"Very poorly."
That's right, Spock. Very poorly. I pretty much told Commander Spock where he could shove it. I'm not going to explain that idiom. And we headed for the reactor, against his advice and in spite of his objections. And here I am, molting like a Cyclokean mud lizard. Okay. And here I am, molting like a Cyclokean mud lizard. But we stopped the reactor from blowing, and that's good enough for me. Storik no longer seems to be giving off icy anger vibes, so Jim figures it's time to wrap it up. The moral of this story is, if you had been there with us, Storik, and we had let you go out into the sun and you'd gotten burned, then it would have been, "Bad Jim! Bad Spock! You are terrible parents!" But I'm an adult, and that means that I make my own decisions, and I take the flak when those decisions have craptastic unintended consequences, like, for example, wicked bad sunburns. Storik stares at him, but Jim's pretty used to that. And if he ever let it make him uncomfortable, he'd be giving Storik all the ammunition the kid would need to walk all over him. So, not happening. I will think on this, Storick pronounces. He turns to Spock and inclines his head formally. I apologize for my harsh words, Commander Spock. I am sure that the past 2 days have been very trying for you.
I accept your apology,
Spock replies, and Storick turns right around and marches back out of the sickbay as abruptly as he came. Kirk cranes his neck around to look at Spock. Am I doing this right? He wonders aloud, and Spock gives him a speaking look. Specifically, a look that says, how the hell should I know?
I was most fascinated by your code of responsibility, Captain.
Jim insists.
Jim, I do not think that I have ever heard you articulate your philosophy on this topic before, as I understand it.
Spock raises an eyebrow.
Your stated policy is that you are responsible for everyone, and no one is responsible for you.
Jim stops picking at his arms to level a finger at Spock. That is not what I said.
Perhaps I have misremembered,
Spock says, in a tone of voice that makes it clear that he thinks Jim is full of shit, which is totally insubordinate, and which Jim absolutely would not put up with from anyone else.
Perhaps you could detail, for clarification purposes, what differentiates your personal philosophy from the philosophy that I have described.
Jim glares at the eyebrow of snide inquiry. He has a catalogue of Spock's raised eyebrows, and no, that does not make him lame, it makes him an attentive and engaged commanding officer, and silently fumes.
You are not responsible for me,
Spock says softly. That's a lot of S's. Spock says softly, stepping closer to Kirk's bed. I am, a little bit. Jim replies, and he means it.
You do not have to defend me from irritated children, either.
Spock continues, but Jim shakes his head. I do, a little bit.
Who defends you, Jim?
Spock asks, and Jim, unwilling to joke, has no answer for him.
Unacceptable,
Spock murmurs. He sits in the chair next to Jim's bed and places a careful hand on Jim's knee. Jim drifts off to sleep to the rhythm of the monitor's beeping and Spock's barely perceptible breaths.
Why is it so windy?